probably fair to say that most of us would have had a moment in our lives when everything changed. Well, our next guest has had more than a few. In fact, his real life reads like the plot of a book. W.F. Logan, William to his friends, as a teenager, volunteered on a kibbutz. He then was so moved by the horrific stories of Holocaust survivors that he decided to settle in Israel, where years down the line he was seriously injured by a car while standing on a pavement, spent months in hospital, in a coma, and after that he interviewed with a spy agency and was asked to propose a possible undercover operation. But it was when he visited the Nazi castle that he was inspired to come up with a very clever book that uses real history to rewrite what could have happened at the end of World War II. The Gothengau Colony is out now, and William is with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Simon. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, no, what an absolute pleasure. Now, I've been reading the book over the last few days, and what is fascinating to me is that in it, obviously, there are real names of real people that I know of. There's obviously a lot of fiction in it as well, but it's all based on a plan that, had the world gone differently, would have been a real plan.
Absolutely. And it was a top secret plan at the time, Master Plan East, the plan for the domination of Eastern Europe. There were three colonies would have been built, huge colonies, two of them in the Baltic. In one of them, there would be St. Petersburg would be included. And the third colony in Crimea in Ukraine really took my imagination by storm, because it was belonging to the SS, and the SS would have had soldier farmers feeding the Reich in their breadbasket, and also defending them from Eastern threats. And I thought, this has never been explored. I've never even heard of it. So I was inspired to go further with it when I visited Wewelsburg Castle in northwest Germany, which was the spiritual home of the SS. Another thing that you don't really hear much about. They had their own religion. They worshipped Norse gods, essentially. And I know that Hitler wasn't really too much of a fan, but Hitler wasn't a well man. And when he died, Himmler got hold of the country, and he decided to make that the religion of the Germans.
And the book, as I mentioned, you know, there are names in it, Himmler being one of them. When you are writing an alternative end to a real event, how weird is it writing fictional characters? The main star of your book is a man called Conrad, who we'll explore in a moment. But how easy is it to then weave in stories of Dr. Mengele and stuff?
Oh, it's pretty easy, because Dr. Mengele has got to be the ultimate bad guy. I think he's forgotten by a lot of young people now, but for people our age, he's still very much in our nightmares. Yes, I managed to weave that in by thinking, where would these SS people go? What would they do when they lived in Gothengau? And Dr. Mengele goes and lives there and carries on his research, if you could call it that. Yes, so it's quite easy to weave in real people. And there were a few very minor characters in there, like the transport minister of the Reich. Who was the real transport minister of the Reich? The captain of the boat that took Conrad to the fatherland was the captain of the boat that took, was the captain of the boat that actually tried to get Jewish refugees placed in America, and they were refused entry everywhere, and they were sent back to go to, I think they went back to Antwerp, and I don't know if many of them were ever seen again.
The book is set, and you obviously had no idea, I imagine, when you were writing it, where we would be in the real world at this point. But Crimea, Ukraine, all mentioned in it, and of course, very topical now.
Yes. Well, it even was at the time when I was writing it, because Russia annexed Crimea in about 2004. But it's been fought over by Russia for the past couple of centuries. If you if you pay any attention to Coronation Street, you might notice that many of the names of the streets in the district are named after places in Crimea, because it was built around that time.
Fancy that.
So it's, yes, I know. It's Hilda Ogden would never know. They, you know, really, there's a lot of things that happened in World War II that nobody's ever really spoken of. And this is a what if, not what if we lost, but what if we didn't even fight?
Now, you mentioned there about things that haven't been spoken of that happened in World War II. Obviously, we mentioned in the introduction you volunteered on a kibbutz, and there you met people who did speak about things that happened in World War II. Firstly, tell me about volunteering on a kibbutz.
It was a lot of fun. You do a few hours work very early in the day. It's, you know, energetic work, possibly. You might be on a banana plantation. You might be picking cotton. You might be washing the pots in the dining room. But once that's over, well, very cheap beer and drink. And you know, as a teenager from England, that can't really go wrong, can it? So I was basically with another 30 Europeans, a couple of Americans. We'd all live together and basically party after we'd worked hard. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
But you did meet some Holocaust survivors. You heard their stories, and that inspired you.
It certainly did. I mean, one of the parts of the book where one of the main characters is almost taken on a train to the camps is actually inspired by something that happened to my late former father-in-law in Romania, who was his family were being hidden by a farmer in a barn, but they weren't allowed to be there during the day. It was too risky for the farmer. All the adults had something to do, some work to do, but him being a child, he had to wander the streets, and he was picked up. And they marched him to the train station. And while he was waiting to get in the cattle trucks at the train station, one of the chaps that worked there came over to him and asked him, "Yakov, what are you doing here? Do your parents know where you are? You should go home now." And that was his very close call. And there was another couple of stories I heard from people who had other similar close calls who were just told to leave, take off your coat with the star on it and walk outside. And they did, and they hid for the rest of the war, sometimes cleaning for SS staff.
I mean, you mentioned it sort of almost in the same breath that there you were a teenager, you were living the dream, you were abroad, cheap beer, and at the same time you're meeting people who have been through just unimaginable situations. Did that strike a chord with you? Were you immediately someone who could empathise with this kind of thing?
Yes, because it's been a big part of my life. It's a big part of everybody's life growing up. I'm sure it is for you, Simon, that we grew up with our parents and grandparents who had been through this themselves, although not so up close and personal. Our country wasn't invaded very much. But those who did suffer the ignominy of having their country invaded certainly felt it later.
It is interesting as well, isn't it? Because the not spoken about, and my generation, your generation as well, we're a similar age. Yeah, my granddad had served in the forces during the war, but never spoke about it, and I never asked him because kind of you just sort of sometimes don't. And now we are much better at discussing things that have happened, much better at you know, remembering the past and remembering the things that must never be forgotten. I guess in other countries that were affected in different ways, it's there's a whole different level of remembrance.
Oh, yes. I mean, in many countries, especially the ones that were occupied, in Holland, you were not allowed to display a swastika, and certainly not in Germany or Austria either. So in many formerly occupied countries, you are not allowed any of the symbolism, and it's not really spoken of very often. I'd say that Britain is the country that really speaks of it the most, possibly Israel. Israel was formed after the Second World War as a result of the Second World War. It's possibly not even spoken of as much in Israel as it is in Britain.
Your own life is fascinating. We'll get back to the book, I promise you, in a moment. But while you were in Israel, you were involved in a serious incident which left you in hospital. It left you in a coma. And it sort of changed everything because of the paperwork involved with your recovery.
Absolutely. And that was 20 years ago yesterday. Not many people would survive. I was standing at the side of a six-lane highway on a crossing island, and as I'd seen previously in the couple of years that I'd been working there, because I was just going out for a walk. As I'd seen previously, a lot of people got hit by cars standing at this point. And it was just my turn that day. But, you know, the cars are going very, very quickly on a six-lane highway, and they're rushing to get past a red light or an amber light or something. They lose control and they hit the island, and I was standing there. So luckily they slowed down a bit because they had to go through a lamp standard and that kind of thing. So I was probably doing 40 or 50 mile an hour when it hit me. The police showed me a photograph of the car. The car never went anywhere after that. No. But I did, and it took a long time. It took a couple of months in hospital, but I made a recovery that the doctors were extremely impressed with. I even woke up speaking Dutch, and they put me in a room with I think they call them in Israel Yekkers. That's like old people that speak Yiddish. And within a couple of hours, I think I was speaking Yiddish as well. So my dad was there. My parents came over. And my dad said that I was standing there telling funny stories to these three old people in Yiddish.
Wow. And,
yeah, I don't remember a word of it.
No, it's a shame. That's a skill that you wish you still had, I guess. The car accident and the time in hospital. We've been asking today about people's stories of homecomings. And I guess if you've been in hospital and you've made a recovery that even the doctors are impressed by, can you remember what it was like to go home for that very first time?
I was kind of in a recovery hospital. I was in for a month after I was in the hospital in a town called Haifa. And when I was in the recovery hospital, I remember being desperate to go home because, hospital food isn't very good, and kosher hospital food is even less good. So I was really keen to go home, but everybody kept encouraging me to stay. I was getting physiotherapy and something. One of the most difficult terms I ever learned in a foreign language is the word for occupational therapy in Hebrew. So I learned that the hard way. But when I got home, I had a lot of different feelings, feelings of luck that I could still see my kids. Lots of things went through my mind.
Oh, I can imagine. And you were designated disabled by the Israeli government, and that's then when the career changed that eventually led you to becoming a writer?
Pretty much. I was doing a programming for companies in Israel. I didn't really want to be a programmer. And I've never really understood what the other jobs are in the computer trade, actually. If you can't program and you can't set up the computers, I've never really been sure what it is that you must do. When I left Israel and started doing some contracting work in Europe that I really got the idea to start writing something. And this is ever popular, the what if World War II. And I kind of know a lot about it. And I did a lot more research, and I found out that the Gothengau colony was something that I'd never even heard of, and something that should be explored and could maybe make into an exciting tale.
And the star of the book is Conrad, who is Amish, and that came about chance conversation with your wife.
Yes, it did. She said, why don't you make one of them Amish? Because it's all about ethnic Germans. This was a real thing in the 1930s. They wanted to bring Germans, ethnic Germans, people who have German grandparents, for instance, they wanted them to come back to the Third Reich and increase their population. And many did. It's been shown in a couple of different TV shows. There's been a minor character who wasn't actually German. He's maybe from Argentina, or it was a scene in Band of Brothers where one of the Germans that has been captured starts speaking to the American soldiers in American English. Then he relates that how his parents brought him back to the fatherland after they'd answered the call. So I think that's never really been explored where somebody has been the main protagonist. And when it was suggested that he be Amish, it took me a lot of time thinking of how to actually get a peace-loving religious person who really is based in the 19th century into the 20th century and the Third Reich. So I did come up with a way for him to actually be on the run, but still be a good person.
Well, the book is, as I say, I've been reading it this last few days, the sort of the drifting through time as well at the beginning was one of those interesting things. And sort of, you know, the comparing then to now, although none of it is now because it's a further past now, but you know what I mean. But it's The book is out. It's called The Gothengale Colony. And it's been lovely meeting you, so William. Thank you so much for coming on. And what a fascinating life you've had. What a fascinating book. Anything you want to say before we let you go?
Well, the audiobook will be out this week, probably. Excellent. And I'm also did the recording and did the reading. And I'd like anybody to follow it on Twitter to be announced, where it will be announced that the release of the audiobook is there. And anybody else to just dive in there and have a good read and have some really entertaining vaguely historical things and just kick back and relax with it.
No, absolute pleasure. And really nice to meet you. And so you've done the audiobook. Now, how was that reading your book aloud?
It was quite difficult because I did it last summer and I had to jerry-rig a recording studio in a wardrobe with some sound blankets. And it was very hot. But you're not allowed to have a fan or anything because it will influence the recording. So it took me three reads and it's a 9.5 hour read.
Wow.
So I spent 27 hours standing in a wardrobe getting sweaty.
No.
But I did put a lot of regional English-speaking accents that I can do, and even not regional English-speaking accents. Some of the characters are Dutch because I do Dutch accents quite well. I used to live there and I speak the language. So yes, it was a lot of fun doing that. I really enjoyed the performance, I even made Dr. Mengele into James Mason.
Nice.
Because he has to be something kind of sinister.
And so it's at the end of the third reading, and I'm imagining you in a hot, sweaty cupboard, you still enjoyed the book. That's the most important thing you did.
Yeah, I still enjoyed the book. I made a couple of changes while I was reading it. You know, it's been edited and edited and edited. I mean, I made the first draft and I just threw it and I started again from scratch. It took me a while to get it right. So this is really as... You know, I've had inputs from a lot of people and I've taken everything on board and I've factored it in and rewritten. And now it's something that I think is original, entertaining. It's farming in Nazi Germany with a pop star and the second priest of the German religion.
Who could ask for more? An absolute pleasure to meet you today. Thank you so much for coming on. The book is called The Gothengale Colony. W.F. Logan... William, to his friends, that's us now, is out now. The wardrobe.